listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Good evening and welcome to Why We Cook on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Chef Erica Wides, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And you're listening to the show tonight on heritageradionetwork.com, located in the handmade studio built behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen to our shows live or archived anytime, and now you can podcast them too, so you can take them with you wherever you're going. Tonight, we're talking about funny little salty cured things. Some little quirky culinary elements that add massive flavor to your food. So if you're a regular listener to Why We Cook, you know that I've already done a salt show. I actually did two salt shows a couple of months ago because the first one had so much information that I couldn't fit it in. So I did a second one. And I also did a show a few weeks ago on oily fish, like mackerel and sardines and those sorts of things. And then I did a show on vegetables that you think you hate but really shouldn't and should learn not to hate. And now what I want to do is bring all those three things together and talk about what happens when you mingle salt, oily fish, and foods you think you hate, like anchovies. It's kind of a magical transformation that occurs. So tonight we're talking about what happens when you take salt and you mix it with strange little, very flavorful, oily, weird things and turn them into little magical lumps of deliciousness that add great flavor to your food. So tonight, basically, we're talking about anchovies, capers, and olives. These are three foods that I love. They're up there in my top 10. But often I get people telling me that they hate them. I can sort of understand the anchovy, but the caper and the olive, they're so innocent and so without blame. I don't understand why people would hate them. In Italy, there's this classic pasta called puttanesca. And if you're familiar with Italian, you know what the name means. It refers to the working girls, the hardworking ladies of the evening. They would make pasta puttanesca using all three of these things, the anchovy, the olive, and the caper, plus garlic and hot pepper flakes. I think they needed that little extra push sometimes to get them through the night. And these very intense foods maybe, you know, sustained them, so to speak. So these are the salty, cured oddities of the food world that serve a definite purpose and fill a need. Kind of like those working girls, they serve a purpose. They fill a need, not necessarily one that's right out there in the open. Sometimes in the sort of darker, seamier side of cooking, the kind of more mysterious underbelly of the cooking world. Same as the ladies who the pasta was named for. And they're often kept out of sight to avoid offending the more proper members of society. Same thing. So it's time that we bring these three foods out into the open. Let's bring the anchovy and the caper and the olive out from hiding and really talk about them. Let's take them out of the sauce and really examine them. We'll start with the anchovy because it's the most important one, I think. So anchovies are, you know, they're these little fish, right? Little tiny fish like a sardine, but they're not really sardines. They're related. And there's hundreds of varieties, too, out there. And you can eat them fresh. That's what my oily fish show was on a couple weeks ago. But often we eat them salted or cured. And they're like the secret ingredient that people can't quite place sometimes when they're cooked into something. When they're added to a food, when they're used as an ingredient, people say, ooh, what's that mysterious, rich, salty flavor? I don't know what that is. And you say, ha, it's anchovy. And, you know, they're really prevalent in foods that people who think they hate anchovies still like remoulade sauce or the old green goddess dressing, and of course the almighty Caesar salad are full of anchovies. And sometimes when I'm doing a dinner party or cooking a dinner and there's Caesar salad on the menu and people come up to me and say, oh, please make it without anchovies, I can't stand anchovies, I throw a couple of extra ones in simply because they came up to me and said that they need to be punished. So I put extra anchovies in and they don't know and they love it. So you can puree them into dressings. People don't know that they're there, but they add that subtle quality. But you can also dissolve them in hot oil. You heat up some olive oil, you throw in some anchovies, and they dissolve. They fall apart, and they flavor the oil. And then you can use that oil to saute greens like chard or spinach or broccoli rabe. Or you can scramble eggs in that oil. Eggs and anchovies are a great combination. Or you can caramelize onions in there and then use those as a topping for bread or for little crostini for focaccia. And once they're dissolved, they just kind of become this mysterious dark shadow in the background, lurking, adding film noir quality and character to your food. They lend a very rich, savory quality that we now know is something called umami. And I think I've mentioned umami on the show before. It's a term for the fifth taste, the taste that humans can identify, but that we don't really have a word for until now. You know, we can all taste salty, sweet, sour, and bitter, but we can also taste umami. And in case you can't remember from our last class when we talked about this, umami is like a savory, meaty richness that that comes from foods that are high in umami. And what umami is free-formed glutamic acid. It's the stuff that monosodium glutamate was synthesized from. But foods that are high in naturally forming glutamates have this like savory, rich, mouth-filling, meaty quality. And so all of these things we're talking about today, the capers, the anchovies, the olives, they're all off the charts umami, and that's why they taste so good. And often umami foods are paired with salt, too, because the umami enhances the salty quality, so you can actually use less salt in the food. Other things that are high in umami are things like cooked tomatoes. The more you cook a tomato, the more umami it gets. Parmesan cheese, aged cheeses, shiitake mushrooms, they're all really high in umami. It was identified in the early 1900s by a Japanese scientist who was figuring out a way to create a flavor enhancer. He sort of accidentally figured it out. And then he synthesized it into a powder into the lab, and it became the notorious MSG. So I'm not a big fan of using food additives, but naturally occurring umami is great in food, and it's been around for a really long time, going way back to the Romans, who used to make something called garum, which was a predecessor of modern fish sauce, which was made with anchovies and salt and was used to season everything. So the anchovy is like way up there on the umami charts, and that's why it's a key ingredient in tasty condiments like fish sauce and Worcestershire sauce. So we're going to take a little quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about the anchovy and the caper and the olive on Why We Cook.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. You know, now you can check out whywecook.com and send me some info that you may have, questions, comments. Let me know what you think of the show. If you have any suggestions for future shows, you can also become a fan of Why We Cook on Facebook. Just look for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network on Facebook, and same thing, you can become a fan. I'd love to hear from you. Okay, so we're talking about anchovies today. We're talking about sort of funny little salted, cured food things that you can add to recipes, you can add to foods to make them taste really great. And we're talking about umami, which is the kind of meaty, elusive fifth taste that humans can perceive. So back to the anchovy. Now, I can kind of understand why people think they don't like them because, you know, they look kind of creepy. They sort of look like flat dead caterpillars, and they're hairy and fuzzy and not so attractive. And I think sometimes people have only ever had them on like really bad cheap pizza, like the kind of industrial bulk anchovy. And that's kind of a tragedy because those are really like the bottom of the barrel of the anchovy world. And they don't have a lot of flavor. They're nasty looking. I can understand why you wouldn't like them. But if you've ever had the really good ones, like the really beautiful white boquerones in Spain, the ones you can get at tapas bars all over Spain that are served with all kinds of other ingredients, it's like a completely different animal. They're lightly salted. They're fresh. They're rich and delicious. And they do them all sorts of ways, like on little toasts and wrapped around olives and deep fried whole or kind of squished into some bread. I mean, they're amazing. They're a really nice foil for other meaty, salty things like Serrano ham, prosciutto. They're great that way. When I was in Bilbao a couple years ago, and they serve these little tiny skewers there, these little Basque kind of skewers that it's like a little tiny pickled hot pepper wrapped in a cured white anchovy and then skewered also with an olive. And you just get this like little explosive firework of a tapa. You just eat that whole thing. And it hits every sense. You got your salty and your sour and your bitter. And it's just insane. It's so good. So you need to kind of, you know, think about the anchovy. If you think you hate them, think again. You know, like I've said before, it's time to grow up and try new things. And before, we were talking a little bit about pasta puttanesca, which is that classic Roman pasta sauce made by the working ladies of the night out of anchovies and olives and capers and other things. But also in Rome, they have this great thing called puntarelle, which is this vegetable that's kind of related to endive, but it's shredded lengthwise into these kind of spiky long strips and then soaked in ice water so it gets curly and crunchy. And then it's dressed with this amazing dressing that's made from minced up dissolved anchovies mixed with lemon juice and olive oil. And it all gets dressed together and it's like crunchy and bitter and lemony and salty and it's so great. And it's a really nice kind of foil to Roman cuisine because that tends to be very meaty and heavy and a little bit rich. So it's really perfect. All right, so moving along, let's get on to the caper because I don't want to run out of time here today. The caper is also one of those funny little salty cured things that sometimes people say to me, oh, I don't like capers. They're weird. They're strange. They're acidic. What's going on with that? How could you not like the caper? It's such a little charmer. So whenever I'm teaching a class and we have to work with capers, first thing I do is I ask my students, well, what are they? What is a caper? Because half of my students don't know anything about food, even though they're in culinary school. And so I say to them, what's a caper? And generally none of them know. And that's fair. It's a fairly obscure thing. But what the caper is a bud, and it's a bud that grows on a bush. The caper bush, Caparis spinosa. If you're ever on Jeopardy, now you'll know it. It grows wild all over the Mediterranean. It grows out of, you know, rocks in the desert in the Middle East. It grows anywhere really hot and sunny and warm like that. And it's got these little buds. And the best capers come from Provence, where they're really tiny and they're brine cured, or the Sicilian island of Pantelleria, which grows nice big fat capers, which get packed in salt and cured. And those two are kind of considered the best ones. And so they're these little buds, and they have to be picked before they open, before they flower. So you have to go out there and watch your caper bush every day so you can get the buds before they open. You don't want them once they're open. And then the little buds are picked, and they're either put in salt for a dry cure, or they're put in a vinegar and salt mixture for a brine cure. And then they're left to kind of ripen in there and develop their flavor. And what happens is as they're curing, they actually have the same compounds in them as mustard greens. Mustard oil develops, and it's what gives them that kick, that little pungent caper. Now, if you leave the caper bud on the bush, it'll flower, and you'll get a beautiful yellow flower. And then it turns into a fruit, because that's what happens to flowers. They turn into fruits. And that's where you get caper berries. You may have seen those before. They're kind of tear-shaped, and they look like olives, but they have a stem, and that's the caper berry. And those can also be salted and cured and used in cooking, but they're particularly good in martinis, actually, instead of an olive. Really nice that way. Sometimes they're served with like cured meats and charcuterie, stuff like that. And here's a good little tidbit, which I never knew, is that the leaves of the caper bush can be used as a coagulant in cheesemaking, the same way that rennet is used in cheesemaking. Those leaves have the same coagulant properties, which is pretty cool. So you can make vegetarian, vegan cheeses. Vegetarian cheeses. So thanks, Wikipedia. That was pretty cool. Who knew? I thought I knew everything there was about the caper, but apparently not. So raw capers really don't have any taste if you just pick them off the bush. And that's why they get pickled. You either pickle them in salt, like I said, or in vinegar, and that mustard oil forms in them, and then they have this great briny, pungent flavor. And I like to think of capers as like the savory version of ice cream sprinkles. You just throw a few onto your food right at the end, and it kind of makes it like pop and sparkle. It's like turning on the lights on the food. It kind of makes everything come together and come alive, like putting sprinkles on your ice cream does. And like the anchovy, they're way up high there on the super umami chart, and they add a lot of flavor to whatever they're cooked with. Although you want to always add your capers right at the end, because they lose their flavor if they get cooked in liquid or if they simmer for too long. And one of the things that umami does in food is that it makes salty things taste saltier. So if you use something high in umami that's also salted, like a caper, you actually don't have to add much other salt to the whole dish because the umami makes you perceive the salt more. And that's good. So you don't have to season the whole dish as much. And it also just makes everything else taste better. It sort of brings up the whole profile of all the other flavors in your dish. That's what accent does, monosodium glutamate. Sort of makes you more sensitive to the other flavors. So why don't people like capers? What's the problem? Is it their brininess? Is it their texture? You know, what is it? I mean, do you know people who don't like capers? I've had students who say, ugh, I hate capers. I don't understand it. So if you know why, let me know. Go to whywecook.com. Send me a little message. Let me know what it is about them, because I like to convert people to caper love. I think of them like little gems. And you can also do a really cool thing with them, which is fry them. So you take the capers out of the salt or out of the brine, rinse them really well, put them in a towel, and squeeze the crap out of them. Get all the moisture out. They have to be dry, dry, dry. Then heat up some canola oil to about 350 and throw the capers in. And what happens is they bloom open in the hot oil, and they get crispy, and you scoop them out, and they're like little tiny caper-flavored potato chips. They get really crunchy and really delicious. And then you can sprinkle them on top of things, like on warm potatoes or on potato salad. They're great with potatoes. Or on pasta dishes, especially like creamy, rich pasta dishes. They're great. Or after you take a pizza out of the oven, throw some fried capers on top of that, and it adds this kind of nice, crunchy little hit right there. It's at the end. Really good also on top of pureed soups. If you do like a potato leek soup, they add a really nice kind of hit of salt and crunch at the end. Or last week's show, I talked all about root vegetables, and I talked about Jerusalem artichokes or sunchokes. And if I made a pureed sunchoke soup, maybe I would put some fried capers on top, because it would be a really nice contrast. It would be great. And they also look really beautiful. So when we come back, we're going to talk about one of the queens of the cured food world, which is the olive, the almighty olive. So we'll be right back on Why We Cook.
Listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Today's program was brought to you by TechServe. www.techserve.com.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. We are broadcasting from behind Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in our beautiful handmade studio. And I am Chef Erica Wides. I'm a chef and instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in New York. And if you would like to become a friend or fan of Why We Cook, you can find us on Facebook, Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network, or you can go to whywecook.com and pay us a visit. There's a blog there. You can make some comments, any questions, anything you'd like to see me talk about in the future shows. I would love to hear it because, you know, I can't keep coming up with ideas by myself forever. So I'm going to need some help from the public soon. And I also just want to mention that there's a new member of the Wides family now on Heritage Radio Network, which is my father. Bernie Wides has his own show now called The Naturalist. It's not about being a nudist, in case you're wondering. It's about being an actual naturalist, as in nature. And his show, I believe, will be on Thursday at 3:30, I think. You can look on the website and find out. But, you know, give him a listen. He's not as good as me, but he's pretty good. So check him out. Okay, so we've been talking about weird little salted cured foods that add a lot of impact to your cooking, that add a lot of umami. Umami is that elusive fifth taste, that rich, savory meatiness. And so we've talked about the anchovy so far, and we talked about the caper so far. And these are also foods that people sometimes tell me they don't like, and I don't really understand why they wouldn't like them. I can kind of see it with the anchovy, but not with capers. And now we're going to get into the subject of the olive. And you know, olives, I mean, they're so major. There's so much to say about them. I could do probably an entire show on olives, and I might one day. It could come down to that. But I wanted to include them because they're up there on the umami charts, too. And they have that kind of salty, cured, oily flavor that works so well as a component in other dishes. They bring so much to the table, so to speak. So there are only a couple of fruits out there in the world that you can't eat raw. Did you know that? Can anybody think of one of them? No? Well, I'll tell you. One of them is the quince. You ever hear of the quince? Quince is kind of a relative of the apple and the pear. It's actually in the rose family. They mention them a lot in Shakespeare. It's a very old fruit. Quince can't be eaten raw, because they're really, really tannic and really bitter, and you have to cook them in order to eat them. Once they're cooked, they have this really perfumey, sweet, beautiful kind of taste, and they cook down and they get kind of soft and they turn pink, and they have a lot of pectin in them, and pectin makes things thick. So often you use quince when you're making jellies or jams, things like that. But anyway, we're not talking about quince today. It's just one of the fruits you can't eat raw. We'll definitely talk about quince later in the fall when they're in season, because they're one of those really interesting kind of quirky fruits. But anyway, the other fruit that you can't eat raw is the olive. It is a fruit. You can't eat them raw. Technically, there is one variety of olive you can eat raw, but the rest of them you can't eat raw. Same thing. They're very bitter. They're very tannic. You don't just go up to an olive tree in Greece and pluck one off and bite into it. You could try, but you can't eat that because it'll be really unpleasant. So they have to be cured. And curing the olive can be done a few different ways. One of them is with lye. Lye, like that caustic chemical that they use to clean drains. Yeah, really cheap olives are cured with lye. We don't really want to be eating lye, do we? It's not so terrible. It basically chemically cooks the olive, makes it much more palatable. Salt curing is good, brine curing, and water curing. You can actually cure olives just by leaving them in water, and they ferment, and they cure themselves. They've cured themselves. They're like Christian scientists. They cure themselves. So lye curing, like I said, which is kind of an unnatural method, results in the worst taste because it leaches out a lot of the fruit's flavor. So the really bad, like canned olives, those are lye cured. And poor quality olives are lye cured. Salt curing, which is also known as dry curing, involves packing the olives just in salt for about a month. And that's what gives you those kind of wrinkled, dry cured salty olives. Often those are like those little black olives from Greece. Those are nice. They're pretty pungent. They're pretty intense. Brine curing involves putting them in a salt water bath in a brine solution for at least a few days or more, and the brine cures them. And that's where you get nice, kind of juicy, crunchy olives. And freshwater curing involves soaking the olives in a daily succession of baths for at least a month, changing the water every day. every day. And that also gives you a nice kind of juicy, crunchy olive. Anyway, that's how they're cured. You can do it yourself. It's actually pretty easy. Right there on our old friend Wikipedia, there's a how-to on how to cure your own olives. It's pretty cool. It's pretty easy. And did you know that there are 75 varieties of cultivated olive in the world? That's a lot of olives. I couldn't name all of them. And the olive trees, which are amazing, if you've ever seen one growing in the Mediterranean or in California, there are these beautiful kind of gnarly stem or trunked trees, beautiful leaves. They can grow to be over 1,500 years old. They're some of the oldest trees on the planet. And they're virtually fireproof. They can't burn down. And if you chop them down, they grow back. They're almost indestructible, which is pretty amazing. They're like miracle trees. So anyway, olives too are one of those foods that people say, ugh, I don't like olives. They're weird. They're salty. I don't like them. And I can understand that if you grew up on those horrible, like bouncy black canned California olives, you know, the ones I'm talking about that are like sliced up in salad bars or like a Taco Bell, they're kind of like bouncy and they come in cans. They're horrible. I mean, those aren't olives. Those taste like, I don't know what, they're bad. And they're truly horrible little things. I would hate olives too if those were the only ones I had ever had. The other ones that are really bad, I think, are the really cheap olives they use in bars that they call pimento stuffed olives. Now, there are good pimento stuffed olives out there that actually have real pimentos in them. Pimentos are roasted peppers. But those cheapo olives that you get at bars that have that red strip inside of them, I hate to tell you this, people, that's not really a pepper inside that olive. If you pull that little red piece out and really look at it, you know what you're eating? You're eating pepper-flavored dyed red gelatin, cut into strips and stuffed into the cheap olive. It's kind of freaky, right? I have some friends who are in the food industry, who in the processed food industry, who told me about this. They exude out these like mile-long strips of red pepper colored and flavored jelly and then chop it up and stuff it into these cheap olives. So next time you're having a martini and you have one of those olives, take it out and really take a look at that thing inside. You can actually like squish it up with your fingers. It's pretty freaky, pretty gross. So if those were all you were ever exposed to, of course you're not going to like olives. So you have to get out there and you have to try the really good olives. And I'm sure all my listeners love olives because you're all very sophisticated people who love food. That's why you're listening to my show. But if you don't usually cook with olives, you should really try to do that one of these days, because you can do a lot with it. They have kind of that same quality as the anchovy, where you can chop them up or puree them and add them to things, and they add that like subtle depth that I keep talking about. You can throw them into stews and sauces, and they add like a nice level of salinity and brine to them. You can make tapenade, which incorporates all these things I've been talking about, which is olives and capers and anchovies, with garlic and lemon and olive oil. So the other three great things in cooking, you mix those things all together and you have tapenade, and you can use that as a spread or in sandwiches or as a dip. And then, of course, that brings us back to the infamous pasta puttanesca, which we talked about in the beginning of the show, which is named for the working girls of the night, the puttans, the whores who used to work, probably still work in Italy, but I don't think they really cook for themselves now between clients. But those ladies, they really had it right. I mean, they knew what they were doing. They would saute up garlic with anchovies and capers and olives. And then they'd add tomatoes to it too, and maybe a few little hot pepper flakes, and toss that with a little bit of spaghetti. And they would eat it between clients because, you know, working girls have to eat too. And they would make it between clients to keep themselves sustained, keep their energy level up. It probably also helped to keep them really healthy because all of that garlic that was in there and those hot peppers and all those cured foods probably helped keep them from picking up some nasty bugs. So I want you to think of those hard-working girls next time you need to add a little bit of umami to your food, next time you want to kind of bring the level of things up a little bit, next time you want to add that kind of noirish, dark undercurrent to your cooking. Add a little bit of anchovy, add a caper, add an olive, because a little bit of that stuff can go a long way. You've been listening to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides. Thanks for joining us. Check us out at whywecook.com, and we'll see you next week.